Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Well, it's election day, voting day in the US with Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris and ex-President Donald Trump vying to become the next US president. The final opinion poll showed both candidates neck and neck still in an exceptionally tight race. And no matter who wins this election, no matter who will be in the White House, history will be made, I can tell you, because Kamala Harris is the first female vice president and would become the first woman, black woman and South Asian American to win the presidency, while Donald Trump is the only president to be impeached twice and the first former president to be criminally convicted. He would also become the first president to win non-consecutive terms in more than a century. Well, for their take on how the election is going, I'm joined from the US by Amanda Renteria, former national political director for Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, and by Earl Morcoach, chief strategist for Republicans overseas. You're both very welcome to the program. I might come to you, Amanda, first of all, because voting is underway, as we know, in all 50 states as of 5 p.m. But to what extent would you say that all eyes in both camps are trained on the seven battleground states?
Well, this year has been, you are right, it's going to be a historical election, no matter what happens here. And I think one of the differences in this campaign has been the targeted efforts, not just in the seven battleground states, but in the actual districts as well. And so all of us are going to be tuned in, not just to the early votes of Georgia and North Carolina that are going to be released first, but also some of those battleground districts in Florida or New Hampshire. And so because there is so much data that has already come in with vote by mail, right? 75 million Americans have already voted. You're going to see strategists really digging into those data to try and get a clue about what they're going to see the rest of the evening.
Earl, where are you going to look to see where the race is going?
Well, I think, you know, you just have to look at only at the battleground states because there are metrics you can look at. For example, winning Miami-Dade County in Florida, although Florida's blood red, that's a huge boon for us, hasn't been done since Bush. but if you look at things like the Democratic firewall that they needed to build up in Pennsylvania, they didn't get where they needed to be. When you look at Nevada, we've got the early vote lead. When you look at Georgia, we've got the early vote lead. When you look at Arizona, we have the early vote lead. We're neck and neck in Michigan. We're neck and neck in Wisconsin. But really, it's coming down to Pennsylvania, and you have all these low propensity voters, rural voters. The Amish are coming out, usually a very non-voting bloc, people you can't get a poll on. And when Joe Biden, keep in mind, Scranton Joe Biden, man of Pennsylvania, they passed him up. And they passed up Josh Shapiro. So a tactical failure on their part. And right now, I would look to Pennsylvania for where the Republicans have made the most obvious early inroads into this election.
Having said all of that, we have our Washington correspondent telling us on their TV news last night, Earl. And this is a man with decades of experience watching elections in various countries, saying that it's way too tight to call this election. We also heard from a reporter in Michigan at the top of the program saying that she met voters going in to vote still undecided. Yet we have the Trump campaign saying that they might declare victory on election night.
Well, it's going to come down to the metrics, right? So I think a premature declaration won't occur. I would say the people who are going into the polls who are undecided as of right now, those are probably our voters. If you're undecided on Trump after 10 years, you're probably leaning towards him and hesitant.
Really?
Regardless of
really?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's a single undecided voter who is going to break for Kamala Harris in any mass. It's going to break for Donald Trump.
Based on?
Just based on the vibes. It's all based on vibes. That's what every single person understands about the last 2 weeks of a campaign. You can throw all the numbers out. It's about the sentiment.
Explain your vibes to me.
No, explain the vibes. The vibes is the fact that you have a shy voter, right? So if you want to step back and you look at it, you call somebody's house, say, are you going to vote for Donald Trump? They say no. You said, will your neighbor vote for Donald Trump? Oh, him, he'll do it. So everybody who doesn't like Donald Trump is very vocal and out there. There's almost nobody left who's flip-flopping between Trump. There's people who are thinking, should I vote for Trump or should I not vote? Should I vote for Harris?
Okay,
or could I not
but could I put this scenario? I'll come back to Amanda in just a second, but could I put this scenario to you, Earl? Let's say I'm a pollster and I ride up to a house and the man opens the door. He says, "We're all Trump voters here. My wife is a Trump voter. I'm a Trump voter. I have grown up kids. They're Trump voters." The wife secretly might be saying, "I've heard his policy on reproductive rights and I'm actually going to vote for Kamala Harris." That could be true as well.
You know, I love that you brought that up because that's what the Democrat Party seems to think marriage is. Some overbearing, like, brute who's trying to control his wife. It's almost like a caricature of a pre-divorce marriage. That's not how American people are. That's not how American men are. And the idea that there's a bunch of, you know, archaic American men browbeating their poor Stepford wives into voting, that is complete fake news. And that is not the type of people that I know in America on either side of the party. That is not how things are going to go. And it's been in the media far too long. It's a nice trope. It's a nice laugh, but it's incorrect.
So it's a Democratic trope. Amanda.
Absolutely.
What are your vibes?
That we beat our wives? Yeah. That's crazy.
No, I didn't say that. Well, what are your vibes telling you about moderate voters, swing voters at this point, Amanda?
Yeah, I think we can look at the data of 2022 where women came out in numbers, really ever since the Dobbs decision got made and overturned abortion rights for women. What you have seen election after election is women have come out to actually vote for the Democratic candidate, vote for people who believe in women's rights. You know, this idea, the shy women's vote is what you're hearing. Listen, I think we have seen already the data show that women have come out in places like rural areas, like in Ohio, where abortion actually was on the ballot and won. And so the idea that women don't have a voice or like, you know, might not be saying something, we actually do have data that proves that. And I think that's part of what's exciting about this election is you're seeing a gender gap. You're seeing when people come out, who are you voting for? And most women are actually voting for Kamala Harris in really big numbers.
Yeah, but I wonder how representative that is, because you could also, let me put a scenario to you.
Yeah.
You could also have, you mentioned women voters, a woman who says, look, I hate Trump based on his misogyny and his convictions and that he was impeached, but I just trust him more on the economy. And I might be a silent Trump voter. I'm not going to tell the pollster or my family or whatever. But once I get into the polling booth, I mean, could that be a possibility? It's something I raised in the program last night. And the contributors didn't said it didn't hold much sway. But could that be a factor in any way, in your opinion?
So I think there I think he has made some gains on the economy in general. People do see Republicans, Trump specifically, being able to help the economy. The issue is when you ask for whom, though, that's a big question in all of these polls. And time again, what you're seeing is whose side is each of these candidates on? And time again, people see Kamala is really for the people, for you. That's come out in all in these polls as well. So it depends on how you're asking that question. I also want to pull out the Puerto Rican community, where after Madison Square Garden and you had a comedian who called Puerto Rico an island of trash, what you saw is one of their biggest supporters came out and said, "Listen, I thought Trump was going to be better for the economy, but I recognize now that he disrespects our community." And what you did see in places like Allentown, Pennsylvania, is you saw Latino men really cross that bridge and say, "You know what? I cannot be disrespected. While I care about the economy, I'm going to go with someone who respects me because I know they will have my back at the end of the day in our community."
I wonder when
that
you look.
Matters.
Sorry to cut across, but when you look back at that, Earl, as a major misstep in the Trump campaign, it's a gut punch, isn't it, for any Puerto Rican voter, any immigrant voter?
Well, I'm an immigrant to America, and I don't see it that way at all. And we still have a commanding presence with the Hispanic community. I think that definitely Kill Tony as a stand-up shock jock comedian was not the right choice for an event. With that said, though, the person she's referring to as one of our biggest supporters was just like some musician who's Puerto Rican and now isn't. I mean, yes, the Puerto Ricans will have an impact on the election, but there was very few people who are going to hear a joke about their country. Keep in mind, a joke, adult people, I'm an immigrant too. You hear a joke about your country and you've spent, you know, 4 or 10 years making up your political mindset. I don't think it swayed a lot of votes, but it certainly wasn't a positive. I'm not going to try to spin it in any positive way. He shouldn't have been invited to that. It wasn't the right audience for him.
You're not convinced, Amanda?
No, more importantly, I think what the Puerto Rican community and Latino community saw is that there was not an I'm sorry, there was not an actually immediate response from Trump himself, the candidate. And that spoke volumes. And that's why you saw some of these celebrities like Bad Bunny, J-Lo, all these folks who really aren't always out there.
Oh my God.
Say, wait a second, this is a disrespect for the community. And by the way, Puerto Ricans are all Americans.
Okay,
right?
let me add. And so
at
the Democrat,
Earl.
No, excuse me. In the Democrat thing, George Lopez went up there and made a joke about Mexicans stealing farm equipment. I mean, come on. Nobody's taking jokes that seriously. Now, you have to admit on this program that the Republican Party today is doing better with Hispanic, Latinx men and women than ever before. Would you concede that?
They're not winning the majority of Latinos. And
it's
we're
not about
see
majority.
Exactly.
No. Are we doing better than ever?
Let me finish. And we're going to see exactly about what happens in these places like Allentown in Arizona and Nevada and this election cycle. This is what's going to be interesting about this campaign, is we'll actually see whether Madison Square Garden and those comments affected the Latino community and outreach to these communities.
But you can see that we've got record numbers of Latinos for us, right? You admit that. It's in the data, correct?
There was momentum. Certainly Latino men. Hold on a second. Latino men.
Latinx.
You saw moving. I'm not done. They were moving towards Trump. And then you had Madison Square Garden, where it really did bring back up the fact that he was throwing paper towels to the Puerto Rican community. It brought up that he came down the escalators and called Mexicans rapists and criminals. It really lifted up all those things that have always been true about Trump. And so I think this is what we're going to see in this election, about where Latinos stood and whether that disrespect for the community finally actually brings out the Latino giant.
Can I ask you both, finally? Can I ask you both? And I know who you want to win, but in your mind, in your head, looking at all the data, who do you think will win, Earl?
I firmly believe that Donald Trump will win. And the reason is because we have nothing to lose. For the last 24 years, if you consider Dick Cheney is now a Democrat, we've been living in their world. So we have very little to lose. Everybody on our side is jazzed. It feels like 2016, and I think we're going to bring it home.
So in your head, in your heart, you believe Trump will win. Amanda?
I think the Kamala campaign has been historic. To be able to get the Cheneys, to be able to get Republican leaders for the first time ever vote for a Democrat, and at the same time hold folks like AOC in one big tent, I believe speaks volume to who America is. It is a big tent. Okay. It is bringing everyone together. So I am hopeful going into this evening.
Okay, well, the beauty of democracy is it doesn't matter what you or Earl think. It's up to the voters at this point. But my thanks to you both, Amanda Renteria, Democrat, and Earl Moorcoach, Republican. Let's wait and see. Thank you very much indeed.